Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, spirits of old, spirits of new, those who run in packs, and those who prefer to go it alone. My name is Jared, and with me is my very spirited friend, Anna.
Hello, happy to be here. That was spirited enough, yeah.
Oh, it was very spirited. Everyone felt it. We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us here at our table. Today, we're at the Two Top table looking at two games. Lone Wolves by Wonderful World Board Games, easy for you to say, and Spirits of the Wild Awakening by Mattel Inc. First up, we're going to discuss Lone Wolves. And I apologize in advance for any mispronunciations. Designed by Yasuyuki Nakamura and Anthony Perrone. Artwork created by Zinko Kang and Yuan Momoko. And published by Wonderful World Board Games.
Lone Wolves is a two-player trick-taking area majority game, where players lead their packs of wolves aiming to claim the best territories for themselves. In a battle of dominance, tactics, and learning from past experiences, Lone Wolves seeks to deliver a quick but tense game of learning which tactics to implement in any given battle. So let's discuss Lone Wolves.
Well, Anna, I feel like it's been a while since you've been on the podcast, so welcome back.
Thank you. I missed being here, for sure.
Yep. I have a question.
All right, shoot.
All right, if you could challenge anyone to a one-on-one duel, real or fiction, dead or alive, and the duel could be anything, who would it be against and what would it be? Just a small question.
Yeah. Just only have to narrow down billions of possibilities.
Yeah, it's true. You got it. Just, you know, off the cuff.
All right. Man, there's just so many hardcore people out there. I would like to challenge the Terminator.
Okay.
Played by Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Naturally.
Yeah. And I would challenge him to a running endurance challenge.
Wow.
I think maybe I could do that.
Nope, you would lose.
Nope, I think I could do it. I think he's strong, but I'm just not sure about his endurance.
He's a cyborg.
I know, but like, pieces break, batteries wear out.
So do limbs.
It might work. We could try.
Honestly, that's not even close to where I thought you would go. Like, I'm always unsure, but like,
my only hope is to just outlast people, Jared.
But you can't outlast the Terminator.
No, he's like, yeah, maybe I could. That's why it's a challenge.
Okay.
To see how it goes.
Okay. It's your choice.
Yeah.
It's your choice.
Yeah. It would at least say a lot of, I mean, John Henry beat the steam drill thing. That was a machine.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's
fair. I just think that human endurance and drive is better than machines.
You heard it here first, folks.
Yep. Mine specifically. I think maybe I could do it.
Let us know in the comments. All right, mine's much more achievable and also a lot more lame.
Oh, my goodness.
Perspective.
You're going to challenge somebody to a board game, aren't you?
I 100% am.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to challenge Tom Vassell to a board game.
Wow. All right, Tom Vassell.
The gauntlet's been thrown.
If you're listening, the gauntlet's been thrown. Jared has to choose his board game.
No. Tom can pick it.
I think it needs to be Lone Wolves.
Okay.
That's fair. I think it would have to be Lone Wolves because you have schooled me so consistently in Lone Wolves, and that is like unheard of in games that we usually play.
I really think it's just I don't even know that it's me. I think this game like rides the wave of an antithesis that you don't like that you don't even comprehend of because you really like.
I think he just insulted my playing and my intelligence,
and that is incorrect.
Definitely,
I would say that you like to. As you just challenged the Terminator to
a running endurance
running
challenge
of attrition, you like to just fully press forward. And sometimes in this game, you got to know when to just take your losses and be okay with that. And that's part of this game.
I took a lot of losses in this game. I feel like
I meant like during the game before you actually lose.
I don't know. I think you and Tom Vassell need to play that game. But I guess you can let him choose if you want to.
I mean, we'll see.
All right. Well, look for future podcast episodes of Jared playing a board game with Tom Vassell.
I wouldn't promise that.
All right.
Anything's
all right.
possible.
We should start talking about this game, though.
All right. Sounds good.
Like we said in the description, Lone Wolves is a trick-taking game, but it's also an area control game. So the way that it works is it works similar to a trick-taking game where each of the two players has a hand of cards.
Mm-hmm.
Highest card wins.
That is generally how trick-taking games work.
Yep. And then whoever wins will lead the next trick. But wait.
Oh, but there's more.
There are also, in front of you, cards representing different areas that you will not score until the end of the game, and they will be scored by the cards that you have played in front of these areas. And so I'll total up at the end of the game, I'll total up my cards and their numbers. Jared will total up his cards and their numbers. Whoever has the highest wins that area, wins those points, then you total that up. Okay. So the way that that works in the game is when I play a card, I'm playing it on a certain location. Mm-hmm. And then Jared plays his card. And then whoever wins gets to keep their card face up.
Yep.
So they get to keep their card with its high number value at that location that they placed it. The person that loses has to flip their card over where it is a 1 point value.
It is, yes.
Yeah, okay. I was like, for
sure. It's referred to as like a scar, but it is worth 1 point.
Yeah, it's a scar.
Along with the lone wolf thing.
Right, right. So you're all by yourself.
Cast away from the pack.
You're a lone wolf. You've only got one left standing. But so you only get one on the card for that point, but you also get to place these tokens on the locations that can change the rules of the game, that can change the point values of the tokens. And there's tokens at the start, but you don't know what they are. So you get to kind of flip them over and do things with these tokens. And it just really changes the dynamic of the game because you're not just trying to win tricks, you're trying to control these locations. And sometimes it's to your advantage to not win a trick because then you get to change the point value on a location or change the rules of a location or things like that. So you've also got to, if you're the person that is playing the cards, you've got to kind of split your points up because if you just win one location, you won't win the game. You need to win at least, you know, 2, 3, something like that.
Sure.
In order to get enough points to win the game. So fascinating game. We loved it. We loved playing it.
Wow, spoilers. We're just jumping right into that.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
You can cut that part out.
It's fine. We'll
no,
keep
you
it.
Should.
Nope.
You should.
You know, every time we have that conversation, I usually keep it in. Anyways, let's discuss. That was our quick overview of how to play. So, Anna, give me some of the things that you really enjoy about this game.
Well, I'd say, I mean, the draw for me initially was that I really do like trick-taking games.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And we've played some really fun twists on trick-taking games from a variety of publishers. We've reviewed a few on the show. And so, yeah, so I was fascinated by this new twist to a trick-taking game.
Mm-hmm.
What kept me coming back was that I couldn't beat you. And this amazing dynamic of this game where there was one game where you won one trick. I won every single other trick and he still won the game because he had much better strategy with moving the tokens around for the different areas to control. So that was fascinating to me that the game could be that versatile. Whereas I mean, I'm not going to say I don't know of another trick-taking game, but standard, if you're playing a trick-taking game and you're dealt a bad hand, there's not a lot you can do. Just wait till the next hand. In this game, not true at all. You can make a bad hand be the winning hand if you are strategic with how you place your cards. So that was definitely the thing I love most about it. How about you?
It's just all about how you lead your pack. You know, you're trying to be the alpha and really guide your crew where they need to go. And, you know, you just got to know your strengths and weaknesses. I mean, I just think that's part of it. But
are you trying to rub something in right now, or are you trying to say what you like about the game?
I mean, Anna, I can't beat you at hardly any game. Like, it's infamously known how good you are at board games and how bad I am at beating you.
And yet you're the one that challenged Tom Vassell.
Yeah, well, You could have. You went first.
No. I made the right choice.
Okay. No, so one of the things that drew me in is this combination of trick-taking with area majority. And learning how to decide which cards are going to be committed where, what strategies you're going to be implementing on each, basically, location that you're trying to either conquer, or you're bluffing and saying, yeah, I want to do that for your opponent, and they kind of overcommit there, and then you just kind of really focus on the things you actually want. I really enjoy that quick area majority game where you're trick-taking, and the trick-taking kind of turns into what you get to do. Either you're going to have a really powerful card in the spot that you want, or you're going to have the ability to kind of affect the battlefield, which so much fun. And the other thing for me that hooked me on the first play, we learned it, and we were done with the first game in 25 minutes. And I was like, okay, now we can do it again and again and again and keep trying out the different strategies. And it's so much fun. It's so compact. And it's something that you can pull out as either an end of night for like a date night, or, you know, while you're waiting for other gamers to show up, or whatever it may be. Maybe you're out at a restaurant, whatever. But the quickness of it, but also the thinkiness of where to, what to put where and when to play what, really was a major highlight for me.
Yeah, I agree with that. Especially the quickness of play was a very good thing in this game. And it let us play it so many times, try out so many different strategies. And we have already recommended it to many people.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, because it's very fun, very versatile.
Yeah, we got to try it at one of the cons. And then the rest of the weekend, because it was so quick, we could just try it that night at the hotel. And then we were telling people about it the rest of the weekend. Like, go check out this booth because they have something really special here.
Yeah, definitely.
So one other thing that we can talk about before we talk about anything we might not like. What about the artwork? I think that the artwork has a, you know, trick-taking games, usually the artwork is very simplistic. And that's still the case here. But I think it really works in that your the focus is not so much on, I mean, there is a theme. And I like the way that this theme is implemented in a quick, we're just going to get it on the table kind of way. Like, it doesn't oversell itself as being something that it's not. And so the fact that you're like the leader of this pact and you're just leading these wolves to try and claim these territories for your own, I think is such a cool way of doing that. Now, I will admit, it's a little bit different than what I expected when I first heard the word lone wolves, but it definitely, once I started learning some of the strategies of how those lone wolves become very valuable, then it just made sense.
Yeah, the artwork is simplistic, but it's like what you would expect on a deck of cards, where the different numbers are different, but it's not going to interfere with the numbers and with you knowing that this is a card. I thought the dynamic of flipping the card, and then that turns into your lone wolf, that turns into your scar, and it still has the 1 point value, was a cool dynamic. Cool. The fact that you didn't like take a loser card or something like that, but you just flipped your card over. So I thought that was a cool dynamic and artwork piece that they put in, that the back of the card was also utilized in the game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It also helps keep the box size down because you're not having to add those extra cards. And you can just focus on the game instead of having to move all these extra things around. Setup is super quick. And I love that too. Everything about this game clips at a very good pace, but it doesn't end too quickly. You definitely feel like you had your opportunity to create your strategy and you either did it or you didn't. So for me, I think it does its job very well. Anna, is there anything you don't like about it?
Well, we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording. I think I had to relearn how trick-taking worked. A lot of times in trick-taking games, I can think, this is my strategy, I'm going. I'm going to shoot the moon. I'm going to win all of them. I'm going to, you know, whatever. You really have to be watching the board and be able to change your strategy. That is a pro. The con, I guess, is I could not figure out how I felt about the fact that shooting the moon did not actually cause me to win. That felt like it was this anti-trick-taking thing almost, you know, where I could win every trick but still not win. Actually, I think you did win one trick. And I don't know if I had won every single one of them. Maybe you wouldn't have won that game, but you won by quite a bit. But I don't know. I just remember that one game being like, oh, that's crazy. Do I like that in a game that's supposed to be a trick-taking game that it differs that greatly from the other games that I've played? So I'm still chewing on that. That can just be for our listeners, you can think if you would appreciate that dynamic or not. All the other versatility and the other parts of it I did appreciate, but yeah, that was an interesting moment for me.
Yeah, I guess that's really interesting because I didn't see that as a con at all. I saw it as, you know, you see so many trick-taking games nowadays, and to have games that just get away from the traditional mold altogether is almost a requirement at this point because of the amount of trick-taking games that are out there in the world. I mean, they can't all do the same thing, otherwise they're going to get very samey. So for me, I loved having to think about, okay, there are some that I just need to lose. And most trick-taking games also have that, where you don't want every trick because the point is to find the right amount. So I really thought that was done in a very unique and very clever way in this particular game. And I think the game wants that. Like, I think based on the title, the way it plays, the strategies, it very much desires you to think through that, the proverbial you, that is, and you too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I liked all the differences from normal trick-taking games. I just wasn't sure if I liked that.
That's fair.
Only specific difference.
Sure. Okay.
Now, I do have another interesting thought, though.
Okay.
Because this game is specifically a two-player game.
It is.
That's it. Can't play with one player, can't play with more than two players.
Yep.
But I feel like you could play a game similar to this with three or four players. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, where you could either do teams with four,
yeah,
or you can add a third. Because since it's highest card wins the trick and then places the area control, I think you could have a first, second, third dynamic, or maybe first and last still gets to do their thing. And so middle is the one that you don't want to be. Like, if you're playing with three people, obviously, if you're playing with teams, then you'd be trying to strategize your tricks to where your whole team only won some, didn't win others, so you could flip the tokens, do the things that you need to be doing. I think it would, I don't know. I just, they've said this is a two-player game, and I'm thinking why. I think it could be more if they wanted it to be.
So I actually don't really have any critiques with this game. I think if you like trick-taking games, if you like Area Majority, this game is awesome. If you are looking for a good two-player game, I would 100% recommend this one. It was easy to get into. It's easy to play. Definitely worth trying out. But I agree with Anna. There have been times where I've played where I was like, man, this would be so much fun to play in a team game. I don't know so much about the three-player game. Like, I think that could require a lot of tweaking and maybe some extra cards or whatever. But I love the idea of maybe, like, you still have just the one set of area majority in the main board, but you have teams working together to try and decide what plays where. So obviously, like, you want it to be a small footprint if you're the publisher, and so you're trying to make it as simple as possible, so I get that. But I know this game gets a lot of love, and maybe a team expansion is a possibility.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the only thing I could come up with, where I was like, I really want this. Like, I think that I love it as a two-player game, don't get me wrong, but I think there's potential here to be really fun at the four-player level.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't think I would try to play this game at four players. I think you'd need a little bit of an expansion, some more cards.
Yeah, you'd need something more.
Something
sure.
A little bit more. So an expansion in the future or something like that, I would definitely be interested in. And another interesting part about if you did play as teams is one of the things that makes this very different from other trick-taking games I don't think we've directly talked about yet is that there's a lot of player interaction responding to the other player. Most of the time in trick-taking games, you're looking at your hand and you're figuring out your own puzzle strategy for how you're going to play your hand.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I mean, one of the rare trick-taking games where you've got to watch what your opponent is doing, what tokens they're flipping, where they're putting their points, and you've got to change your strategy in order to respond to them. You can't just come up with your plan and how to play your hand. And it'd be very interesting adding, if you did add teams or something like that, there'd be even more opportunity for player interaction in the teams working together and coordinating and probably limited communication, things like that.
Sure.
So I just think that'd be a really neat thing to explore since the game already has a strength in that it adds a player interaction response component to trick-taking games.
Well, one of the other dynamics we didn't really touch on, and since you mentioned that, it made me think of it, you know, given that it's a two-player trick-taking game, you have a very good idea of what's going on in your opponent's hand. And so you can kind of anticipate what you think they're going to do, but it's not in such a way where you can kind of pre-plan it out. Like, there's still a lot of choices to be made, and based on the choices that are made determines how the thing plays itself out, instead of just we're playing cards and it's just what it is. So even though it's just a two-player trick taker, there is still very much like you don't know for sure, you don't know exactly how they're going to do it, and you can try and anticipate, but you kind of feel like a soccer goalie in that you're kind of anticipating and they could go left, right, or center still. So I do like that aspect as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So what would you grade this game, Jared?
Yeah, so for me personally, it's an A. It does exactly what I wanted to do when I got this game. When I thought about it and I heard the pitch and I was kind of envisioning what it would be, it did it. It did it perfectly. So it's an A for me. Again, area majority, trick-taking, two-player. If you're looking for those things, even if you're looking for trick-taking and two-player or area majority and two-player, or like I wonder what it'd be like to have a trick-taking game with area majority, like this game will hit that. And I think that you absolutely should give it a shot because it is a true gem, in my opinion. What about you?
I agree. I would also give it an A. I don't know if I would quite give myself an A for how I play the game, but...
I mean, I think you're getting there. Like you said earlier, there was this having to shift your mind.
Yeah, it really was.
But then, like, now you're starting to beat me again, so it's fine.
Yeah, I've beaten him a few times. I know we've played up that Jared has beat me a lot at this game, and he has.
It was a big deal.
I have won a few times with the game. And I'd give it an A just because it does what it does very, very well. I like that it can be thinky and be done in 15 minutes. I like that it's very smooth. I like that it's very easy to learn and play. This would be a good intro game for somebody that's not a gamer. And like Jared said, if you're looking to just even try out some of the area control aspects or trick-taking aspects, you can definitely try it out. We were also, I thought of another thing when you were saying about how you kind of know it's in the other person's hands a little bit because of there only being two players. We did not mention earlier when we were talking about the directions that there is a trump suit, and the trump suit can change throughout the game. So I did want to, that made me remember we hadn't said that before. So I wanted to mention that because that adds more variability. It's not just I know I've got these higher cards than my opponent, so therefore I know I'm going to win these tricks, because the trump could come into play and the trump could change throughout the game. So that's an important thing.
In fact, it does. And there's a decent amount of strategy about deciding what to lock down when, because that affects the trump.
Yeah, definitely. Also want to note that the publisher is currently printing more copies. This game got hot really fast, and it sold out. All that we could find when we kind of did a quick cursory look is people reselling, but they are in the process of printing more and should hopefully get those out soon.
Well, and I know Essen is in like 2 weeks after this episode drops, and I believe they have a reprint ready for that. And then I believe there should be more copies available after that show as well.
Yeah. So sorry you have to wait a few weeks, but it is worth it in our opinion.
You know what? This could be, for your significant other, a great stocking stuffer. As we start thinking about Christmas or whatever holiday you celebrate, this would 100% be a good fit for that. It's a small box, but super fun to play. So just something to think about. Or maybe you're looking ahead to Valentine's. I mean... what says I love you like dominating territories and kicking them to the curb?
That's right. Giving each other scars.
Scars.
Of love and dominance. Okay, anyway.
All right. well. All right. So
let's go on to our next game.
We'll move on to our next game here. Spirits of the Wild Awakening, which is a reprint of Spirits of the Wild, which I believe came out in 2018. We'll swap out here. This is designed by Nick Hayes. Shout out to Nick Hayes for teaching Anna and I this game at Gen Con. Kind of, honestly, I think his teach kind of sold me on the game. So I love it when designers get out there and teach the thing that they made. It has a special touch to it, and you can kind of tell the passion they have behind it. Artwork is created by Rachel Quinlan and published by Mattel, Inc.
Spirits of the Wild Awakening is a two-player set collection game where you are collecting colorful gems and assigning them to create sets on your animal spirit boards. Many spirits in the wild want to help you succeed, So as you take your actions, you can call on them to assist you in your journey. But the tricky coyote is lurking about, waiting for the opportunity to mess up your plans. Only one can be declared the true leader of the animals. Will it be you? Let's discuss. Spirits of the Wild Awakening. All right, Jared, I have a question for you.
Okay.
So in this game,
yeah,
you are just interacting with animals, creating beautiful sets of gems, but you got to watch out for the coyote.
Yeah.
So my question for you is, what is the scariest encounter you've ever had with a wild animal?
I want to say it's that snake that wouldn't die.
That's true.
We
encountered a zombie snake once.
We sure did. It was in the back of the church that we were attending, and it was right next to a kid's playground, so we felt like we had to get rid of it. And I don't know how I ended up with a shovel, but I got a shovel.
No, you were standing on the picnic table throwing rocks at its head.
No.
That was it. You did it first.
Then we got the shovel. I remember there being a shovel involved because I remember whacking this thing's head that hard and it still didn't die. Anyways, my life was never in any real threat at all, but the snake did freak me out a little bit. I hate snakes so much.
I remember one time you thought it was dead, so you had it on the end of a stick,
yeah,
and you're carrying it back to throw in the woods, and then it started crawling off the stick.
Like, no.
So funny. You merely stunned it with your blow to its head.
Merely
flesh
wound.
Yeah. Yeah, that was freaky.
Yeah, snake's going to come back and haunt me one day. I'm sure it's not dead. Almost convinced of that. Because I remember, like, running across the parking lot to the woods as it was, like, starting to try and come off.
As it was coming alive for the third time.
And then just chucked stick and all into, like, I was just, get out of here.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right, so now I have to tell a story about a snake that is going to come to my aid one day. Not one that's going to come and haunt me.
Well, that's not the question. You have to talk about your most horrifying wild animal experience.
Well, there's just so many.
That's true. You have way more than I do.
I know. I'm like, man, does it have to be horrifying or just like emotional?
It's your question.
Okay. Because there's this one time. Never mind. That's too gross.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to talk about the snake. So this was actually just a few weeks ago. And we've just recently moved onto a property that has a little bit more land. And I swear, our middle child, every time she goes outside, she sees a snake.
Every time.
I don't know.
It's absurd.
It really is. The rest of us have not seen as many snakes as her. She's just got really good eyesight or something like that. She comes in all the time. Oh, this snake over here. Oh, this snake over there. So she comes inside a few weeks ago and she's like, hey, there's a snake. And I want to see these phantom snakes that she keeps finding. And so I run outside to try to see the snake. Sure enough, there's a snake in the garden bed and it's moving very strangely. And as I get closer, I realize it's caught in some netting. Like people put bird netting or something like that, either over bushes or like on ground to keep like rabbits from burrowing under and getting vegetables, things like that. Anyway, so there was this netting that was kind of a little bit under the plants and the snake had gotten stuck in it, to where it couldn't get unstuck. And so it was really scary. But what we ended up doing is we were able to get the snake out. And then I had to have somebody kind of take a pole and like trap the snake's head because it kept trying to bite me, while I got scissors and I cut the netting off of the snake's body. That was terrifying, but it was also really cool. Like, my hands are literally touching this, like, the scales and the warm body and the live snake, and I'm cutting this off of it as it's trying to, like, thrash around and, like, get at me.
Nope.
And, oh, man, it was scary, but it felt good. I mean, we saved the snake. It went off to scare my middle daughter another day. Why don't you like that story?
I just don't like snakes, man.
I just think me telling that story scared you more than it scared me.
Yeah, it didn't scare me. It just kind of grosses me out a little bit.
Well, I like to think that maybe the snake knows it's rescued and it'll come be my ally one day.
Sure. All right, so let's talk about how to play this game. So in Spirits of the Wild Awakening, you are working to collect sets. There are six different colored gems, which you will be collecting. Sometimes you'll be collecting all different types. Sometimes you're going to be going for the same types. Just kind of depends. There's red, black, blue, yellow, purple, and white. And then the very special, very powerful, clear spirit gems. The spirit gems do a couple of different things. We'll talk about the second thing in a minute, but the first thing that they do is they trigger the end game when there's enough spirit gems out of the bag. So you're going to have six different actions in front of each player, and you can choose to do one of these actions and then flip over that tile. Now, most of these actions are going to be centered around either collecting gems or adding more gems to the bowl for people to select. And so you might have select one gem. You have two of those, but when you flip them both over, then you get to move the coyote, which we'll come back to in a second. The third one is collect two gems. You have put two new gems in the bowl and then collect one gem. Or you can add three gems to the bowl and move the coyote. Or you can reset your actions and then you can use a spirit card, which is you have two spirit cards out at any given time. They have different abilities on them, which give you some kind of a bonus. So as you've kind of picked up, once you do an action, it's flipped over until you do that last action. Now, when you move the coyote moves to one of the animals on your opponent's side of the board. And as long as that coyote sits on that animal, it cannot do any sort of set collecting.
Which is very thematic. That animal would be way too scared.
100%. It's also super annoying to be hunted while you're trying to just collect the stuff that you need to survive and thrive. And so that coyote just sits there and stares at you and mocks you like a coyote does, and your opponent goes on about their business. Turns will go back and forth until that fifth spirit gem is out, and then the game will conclude. You will determine your points based on how many different sets you've completed. And each of the different animals will have a different set collecting rule and different levels of point values that you can obtain depending on how much of their little board that you've covered up.
Don't forget the gem in the corner and the doubles.
I'm getting there.
I'm sorry.
So we talked about how there's a second thing that the spirit gems do. Anna wasn't listening, but I didn't forget. Anyways, you can place spirit gems. They start in the bowl just like all the other gems. And when you claim one, you put it in the other corner of this animal tile. Which is great because it doubles the score of that particular animal. But it also locks down that tile where you cannot add any more gems, and it has now had a final score to it. And don't think you can be sneaky by just leaving all the spirit gems in the bowl and keep playing. Even if there's five spirit gems and they're all in the bowl, then the game is over. So, with that, let's discuss.
All right, well, I mean, I just want to start with the artwork on this game.
100%.
Because I think any game about spirits and the wild, you want it to just be gorgeous. You want it to remind you of nature, but also have this mystical nature to it. And this game delivers. The 100%. Spirit animals themselves are beautiful. The stones are beautiful. You can grasp them. They're smooth. They're just wonderful. And even the animals themselves, as you're collecting and putting them on, I don't know, it just reminded me of almost like constellations as you were completing and filling in the animals. It's a very beautiful game.
So I want to give a nod to Rachel because she's the artist. And she was not the artist for the original game that came out in 2018. And I was kind of looking over some of the original artwork versus what she did. And I love how she paid homage to what the original was, but then kind of gave it an evolution, if you will, into a new phase of what they wanted this to be. I've done a little bit. I didn't play the original game. You didn't either, I don't think. And so this was kind of our first experience with this particular game. I'd heard of it, but never really got around to playing it. What I will say is the little bit of research that I've done from players who have played both, everyone would say that this is an improvement in every way. The artwork's a little bit better. There's more choices with the various animals. There's more variety within the animals themselves that might have been there the first time around. everything has gotten a really good facelift, and this is what you want a reprint to look like when you're doing a second edition, where every aspect has been considered. You give credit to the original, but also go ahead and give it that bump that it needs. And so it's a perfect 2.0 as far as stepping from first edition to second edition. And you could see the constellations a lot in the original as well, like you mentioned. Yeah. So I actually like this artwork style better. I think it's even more of that mystical kind of feel to it, which I think is so important when you're talking about spirits and that sort of thing. So love that aspect.
And the flavor text as well enhanced the game, enhanced the theme and the mystical quality of the game. But it wasn't too much. You know, it was just enough to give that sprinkle of theme and flavor throughout the game and make it really enjoyable.
Sure. Well, and for a game that's like relatively straightforward and it just kind of sits in this space of you can think about it as much as you want to, or you can just collect gems. Like there's a range as far as what you want to put into this. But even within that, there's a lot of options. Both the animals and the spirits have a plethora of choices as far as what you're going to play with. And so you can put together all these different combinations. And I really think they really committed to it because they didn't have to throw that many in to give you enough replayability for a long time because of all the different combinations that you can have.
Yes, that was one thing I was going to say as a big pro of the game for me. I love it when games give you more than you would expect. And when I opened this game, there were way more different choices for animals than I could have expected. And there's also different ways to combo animal sets to where, I mean, you could be collecting the same set as your opponent, different sets. You can also have animal sets that gear towards different types of gameplay and kind of create your gameplay experience based on the types of animals that you are creating throughout the game.
For sure. For sure. As long as we're talking about things that we like, so for me, set collection is kind of what it is. Like I think it's just you're trying to find the things that you need and you're putting them where you want to put them. What I liked about this with the variety of different animals is all the unique ways that they came up with for what kinds of sets you're wanting to collect. And so for me, that was just such a fun little add that I think actually elevates the game to another level. There's some other fun aspects too, don't get me wrong. But I did want to go ahead and mention that because, you know, no two animals are the same. And deciding, do I risk it for this really big point score? Or do I play it safe and kind of focus on some of my other animals? Because you've got five animals in front of you at any given time. And for those that are worried about different combinations, they do give suggestions for combinations of animals that you could do based on theme and as far as actual collaboration together. I mean, there's not that much playing off of each other. But if you're worried about that, there are some suggestions for that. But it also invites you to put together your own set of animals and spirits that you want to.
Yeah, I just think it's neat that the set that you put together can affect the feeling of the game and how you play it and your play style. So I think that's a really neat aspect because they have good diversity with how the sets are created and what they do. I will say another one of my favorite components of the game is that your turns are dictated by the tiles that you have in front of you, and you have to turn them over. And then you have a tile that you actually turn over that refreshes all of your other tiles. And that ended up being a very strategic tile because you didn't necessarily want to just play out all your tiles and then refresh. Because refreshing at a certain point in time, there's this interesting dynamic between you have to draw stones out of the bag and put them in the bowl, usually, before you can then take them out of the bowl and add them to your player card. And so if you're strategic with when you refresh, when you know that your opponent's about to fill up the bowl, and then you can really quickly play your take two stones card because you know there's a bunch of stuff in the bowl versus, or maybe you don't want to play your last card, which is to refill the bowl, because then they're going to play their two stones. So instead you refresh without playing that card at all. So that was a neat dynamic for me, is that you didn't just have turn choices. Once you used it, you couldn't use it again. And you could refresh all your choices at any point in time. It became a very big strategy part of the games that we played.
For sure. I think another one for me is the coyote. The coyote is so fun.
You hated the coyote.
No, I think it's so fun, and it is very strategic as far as deciding when to use it. You know, we talked about in the how to play portion about how there's two actions that when they flip both over, they make the coyote face, and that triggers you moving the coyote. Knowing when to move it is so important, because you would just be like, oh, of course I'm just going to wait till it's on my side. Well, sure, but you might be okay with it sitting on your side, depending on where your opponent puts it, for a little while before you decide when to put your little combination of action, which stone you're selecting, and spirit that you're all trying to trigger roughly at the same time. Because those spirits become very helpful and in being able to create little combos. They're not too big, but they definitely add a little bit of an element of putting a couple of different things together. I loved when my board was empty and I could reset my board with one of the spirits that let me take another turn, and then I could jump right into something else because the board had been set for me in a nice way already. So there's just lots of different ways to go about this very simple little game.
Yeah, and you only get to take the spirit actions when you refresh, so that's another strategy point for when you refresh. And I don't think that you did mention this in the how to play, but it is a cool artwork component that when you flip over both of your take ones, mm-hmm. they make the coyote face.
They do.
And that's the reminder, move the coyote now. So,
and there is a little bit of hot potato of like, you're not 100% sure when that spirit gem is going to come out to end the game, and so you really don't want that coyote sitting on your side for any longer than you have to, because you want all those things to score and you want to be able to enhance them as well as you can. So I love that timing aspect. I love not knowing when the game is going to end, and that the game could go on for a while or it could be over in a few minutes, and you've got to really be intentional about each move that you make. Anything else from you on things that you like?
Well, I'll just say my initial draw to this game was the theme. And I think we have reviewed nature games, you know, pretty games, things like that. That's a draw for some people, the idea of you're creating cuddly little animals and it looks mystical and fun. So I think that's an important thing to note if you're thinking about getting this for somebody. Do they like that type of mystical, fun nature kinds of games? That being said, it did not have that. Some nature games go for a very peaceful, you know, contemplative vibe. It did not have that. There was backstabbing. There was having to watch your opponent's every move to try to make sure they didn't finish their big animal that was going to give them their most points. And you kept that coyote over there and kept at the ready of like, here's what I'm going to do if they do this. Here's what I'm going to do if they do that. So maybe it can become not quite to the extent of chess, but there's a little bit of a chess-like aspect of trying to predict your opponent's next move so that you can have your stuff prepared in response, or that you have a backup, or you have something else that you're going to do in the game. So it doesn't have that nature vibe, but that's what initially drew me to it is the beautiful theme of the game.
Yeah. I, you know, it's interesting you say that, because it reminded me of a review we did a while ago of Harmonies, where I was like, this is just another nature game, and it had so much potential to be something else. Or to be more enhanced. This is what I wanted for Harmonies from a theme perspective, where you have more going on and you have the spirits really playing a role in the game. And so like the animals almost feel like an afterthought, like they're there, but it's about the gems that you're collecting. It's about knowing when to do this or that or the third, centered around the spirits and centered around the gems to be able to then score the animals. But the animals are just kind of like...
And the game also plays quickly. Oh. It does not overstay its welcome. The box says 20 minutes. We've played games slightly longer, slightly shorter, because you could just randomly draw those five stones before you get too far into the game. And so that is also a fun component where it feels like you're building something. I very much do like games where you are building something, because you're set collecting and you're building the animals. But it does not drag on. It really, you're getting in, you're doing what you can. It's not even really expected that you would finish building all of your animals, so you have to be very strategic with which ones you build, which ones you focus on, which ones are you just going to build partway and then go ahead and put the gem on to double your points, even though you didn't get max points for that animal. So that's a good thing for this game, is that it doesn't linger on longer than it needs to.
Sure. And I know there's like some animals that require all the variety, but I love that there's six different colors in the bag, because even though there's only a few gems coming out at a time, the odds of variety in colors is there, which is usually what you're looking for. But there's also, you know, if you do need sets, there's a good amount of each color that you could find that as well. And I love that there's five different animals, because you're never in a... I've yet to be in a place in this game where I'm like, there's just nothing for me to do. Like, I just can't do anything. The game is always moving. You're always having ways of, okay, well, I can't work on this because the coyote's on it, and this color's not up for this animal, but I could start working on this, or I could do this. So, or I could just go ahead and reset my board. Like, there's a lot of choices, and I love that. And so I love the variety, because it's weird, because even though there's backstabbing, there is a casualness to this game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I remember one night you said, hey, let's play this game. I was tired. I was like, I don't want a strategy game. And then I just decided, you know, so I'm not going to make it a strategy game. I'm just going to collect my stones. I'm just going to be chill. And it was still a very enjoyable experience without me having to think chess-like. So I think, yeah, suitable for people with different play types as well. For
100%.
Sure.
Anything you don't like?
Well, so, okay, this is a thing, because I kind of just mentioned it as a pro, but also, especially in my first few plays, it was a con. Because I do like building games. And I am used to building games where you're starting at your foundation and you're building. Because I do like building games, like I said earlier. And I am used to building games where you're trying to get everything built. You're starting at your foundation, you're working all the way up, and there's the possibility to get everything built. And it was a couple plays into this game before I realized there's not really the possibility of getting all five of my animals built. That's not the goal of the game, is to get everything built to completion. It's to pick and choose. And so I had to wrestle with that a little bit, and I still do. I still... When the game ends, it sometimes still feels too soon, or it frequently feels too soon that the game is ending but I wanted to finish this animal. I didn't even get to start on this other animal. So that is a pro of the game in a strategy sense, but I wonder if it takes away a little bit from the enjoyment of the completion of the building project for people that really enjoy that, like me. How about you?
I think if you're a really seasoned gamer and you're looking for a lot out of a game, this is just not going to be it. It's light, and I'm okay with it being light for what it is. And I do stand by there's a lot of changing it up and there's a lot of replayability for what it is, but it will always be what it is. And so as long as you're okay with that more relaxed, just kind of chill, we're going to collect some stuff that comes out of the bag, then you're going to enjoy this game. But if you want something heavier, I don't think this is it. And I think for me, in my experience, that's just kind of set collection on a general mechanic. Like, there's just only so much that comes out of set collection, and that's fine. So for me, there were multiple times where I was like, I don't know, like I can anticipate exactly what Anna's going to play. And it's not because like her moves were obvious. The game
just because you're a genius.
No, it's just because the game, like between what's in front of you with the bowl of gems and the spirits available and the actions you have left, like everything's open. So there's nothing for me to be like, well, I don't know what she's going to do here. There are times where I don't know because of the amount of choices, don't get me wrong. But then there are certain plays where I'm like, well, I know exactly what she's doing. And it's sometimes it's a pretty big moment where I can go ahead and anticipate that and then counter it with something like I can go ahead and refresh even though I don't really need to, because I can get rid of the spirit that would really help you. And so if you don't like backstabbing, that's the other thing to keep in mind, because as casual and as chill as this game is, there is some backstabbing that goes into it.
I mean, just the fact that you have to move the coyote when you have both of your singles flipped over is a backstabby mood because you have to move it on to one of your opponent's animals, and that blocks that animal.
And I'm not necessarily against that. Like, I think there's some really cool aspects that come into play because of that. But I do think it's something that is worth considering as you decide whether or not to take a look at this game. Because if you're someone who only wants a chill game of set collection and no backstabbing, this ain't it. I mean, there's just too many ways that you can affect what's going on your opponent's side of the board because of the coyote and the ability to cycle the spirits a little bit.
Well, and I would say also the ability to take the color stones that you know that they want,
yep.
The ability to refresh and play your hand to where they have to refill the bowl, and then you get to take the first chance of getting what colors you want. I mean, there's a lot of ways to backstab your opponent. And again, we here at the Game Table Podcast, we believe that every game has an audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're really trying to just say, here's the audience this might work for, here's who it may not work for. Not going to work for people that don't like direct conflict.
Right.
There's direct conflict. You're not directly battling each other, but there's enough direct conflict, I think, that your people that don't like that would be uncomfortable. And then, like Jared said, maybe not for gamers that want really heavy games. But that also means that this is a game that is for people that might be newer to the hobby, might be a good one to pull out on a more casual game night. It does teach quickly, because I know
it really does.
It teaches very quickly. And so it's an accessible game, which is kind of the other side of the con of it's not a heavy game.
But it also is a pro if, like, you're looking for games to get into, especially as a couple, or,
yeah,
you know, if you're just two friends that are trying to figure out what to play. I think this is a great entry point as far as a game that gives you a little bit but doesn't overwhelm you. So it's an interesting dynamic. Like, I'm not upset with this game. I don't even know that, like, the things that I just critiqued are really things that I have a problem with most times. Like, the only one of the things that I listed is probably the lightness. Like, it will determine how often I get this game out because it's just what it is. Now, Anna and I are in a season of life where life is very busy, and so it might have a place. But then when life slows down a little bit or changes where we're not as tired, it's probably less likely to see playtime just because of what it is. And so,
yeah,
that's all well and good, but it's just something to keep in mind.
But I really liked a game that I could play when I was tired and just be chill with it.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of times when I'm tired, we say, I guess we can't play a game tonight because we're tired.
We're
and I'm not going to focus on strategy right
more
now.
Strategy
so
games.
That was kind of fun to have that experience.
Sure.
I am curious about your opinion, Jared, that this is an exclusively two-player game. How do you
this
feel
is,
about that dynamic?
Just like Lone Wolves, I'm so bummed it's only two players. I mean, I get it because you got these, like, nice thick tiles for the animals with recessed holes to hold the gems so the gems aren't bouncing anywhere. Another great artistic aspect,
yeah,
by the way.
Beautiful.
Of the components. Love that. I did see someone on BGG suggest that if you had two copies, you could probably play it and make some alterations with just like one spirit animal deck, but then everyone's playing the same. Because when you play, everyone's playing the same animals. So you could have that kind of thing. I don't really think it'd be a team game, but I also am kind of like, why can't this game be a 3 or 4 player game? Like, I just don't see it. So, I just like Lone Wolves, I'm kind of like, man, I love that it's a 2-player game because that draws Ann and I in to want to try it. But I also like good 3 and 4 player games that play well at 2. So, yeah, that's kind of my opinion.
Yeah, I was a little bit confused as to why they chose to market it only as a 2-player game. I didn't see the need to limit it to 2 players, except for maybe, again, to reduce the box size, the impact, to let them put high quality components in there. It's an excellent price for it.
Oh yeah, it's like $22 on Amazon right now.
Yeah, and so that's great. And so maybe if they were making enough of those components for more people, maybe that was part of what they were considering, but I agree. I don't understand why you couldn't play it with more than 2 people.
I mean, I wonder if the math really kind of gets wonky for the way the end game is triggered, because, like, you have, it's based on the amount of clear spirit gems that come out, and so you've got to alter all those numbers if you have a 3 and 4 player game. So then maybe you've got to figure out what the new trigger is as far as how many crystal or clear gems have to come out. Maybe it got super whack
I don't know. I feel like that's an easy playtest problem. My thought is that maybe the game is light enough that you don't want it going longer than 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And the more people you add, that will just continue to increase the time because you're just going around doing your actions, picking up your gems. And so maybe that was a consideration when they played with more people. Maybe Nick can tell us.
Reach out, Nick.
Yeah, we'd love to know.
I've already called out Tom Vassell. I mean, what's another reach out?
Making friends.
We'd love to make friends. But no, I mean, I do like it at two players, but I am also kind of like, man, we could play this at three and four, I feel like. So
we'll see.
That's my thought.
Yeah. Well, what grade would you give this one?
I also think this is an A, especially for a set collection game. The artwork's great. The components are awesome. The gameplay's quick. And for a lighter game that kind of also introduces elements of what you want to start thinking about as you're getting into the board gaming hobby, this does great. So especially at a price point of $22, I would 100% jump in on this.
Yeah, the price point of $22 might boost my score a little bit. I was going to initially go with an A minus. The reason being, I mean, I think it's an A game. I really do. But, comparing it to some other games that I've given A's to, when I played this one, I loved it. I enjoyed it. We got a copy. But then it didn't stay on my mind necessarily like some other games do that I just want to play every day for the next however many weeks because they were so fun. Now, when we did get back home and pull it out and say, oh, yeah, there was this one and kind of reread the rules, remind ourselves how to do it and played it again, I said, oh, man, I did really like this game. I would really like to continue playing this game. But I think that's the A minus just because it didn't stick with me. In that I want to find out what happens next, or I want to figure out this piece of strategy. And I think that's just the lightness that you were talking about. Yeah. And so definitely an A. It's an A game, but it's an A minus just for me because it didn't necessarily leave me wanting more like some games have.
And I agree. I think that is the lightness. Like it's just what it is. Like, I don't know that it's not a game that's going to keep me up at night thinking about, oh, what if I had done this?
Yeah.
Which is fine. Again, like it's just, not every game has to do that. And for me, for this game to sit in a light space, it's good.
Yeah, and it's an A game for sure for what it is.
All right. Well, Anna, do you want to say anything else before we call it a day?
No, just love playing games.
Great. Me too. Thank you all for listening. And if you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the show or the game itself, either one, Spirits of the Wild Awakenings or... I was so sure I was going to do that smooth. Lone Wolves, we would love to hear from you. Links for our socials are in the description, along with all the other links that we have. If you don't like socials, I get it. There's 100-something, I mean, that's hyperbole. There's a lot of ways to get a hold of us. I would love to talk to you in whatever capacity you would like to discuss. 5-star reviews, subscribing your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, hitting the like button if you're on YouTube, subscribing. Subscribe, and join the conversation on Discord. All these heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Ashley McCavery for our cover art and for our new logo, to Anna Snyder who made the intro and outro music, and to Alexi Chistelin for the How to Play background music. Join us next week as we head back over to the feature table. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
Rawr. That was a wolf.
Yep.
And an animal spirit.
Got it.
Yep.
Okay.